The Epistle of Barnabas in a Nutshell, Part 2 by Bart Ehrman. Here I continue my discussion from the previous post of the major themes and emphases of one of the best known of the Apostolic Fathers, the Epistle of Barnabas, which embodies strong attack on Jews for misunderstanding their own religion and misinterpreting their own scriptures. According to this anonymous author, Jews are also wrong to take the dietary laws of the Old Testament literally. God did not mean that his people were to not eat pork or rabbit or hyena, all of which are proscribed in the Torah. The injunction not to eat pork means not to live like swine who grunt loudly when hungry and keep silent when full. People are not to treat God in this way, coming to him with loud petitions when they are in need and ignoring him when they are not. See chapter 10, verse 3. Not to eat rabbit means not to live like those wild creatures who with every passing year increase their sexual appetites and add an additional orifice to their bodies, allowing them to propagate at random. See chapter 10, verse 6. Likewise, not to eat hyena means not to live licentious lives like those promiscuous animals who are thought to change their gender every year, alternately becoming male and female. See chapter 10, verse 7. For Barnabas, the laws of God are meant to induce ethical behavior. They are totally misread if taken literally. This rule also applies to the most distinctive Jewish law of all, the law of circumcision. God did not want his people literally to cut off the foreskins of their baby boys. The sign of circumcision given to Abraham was something quite different. It was the sign that salvation would be given to the world through the cross of Jesus. To justify this interpretation, Barnabas points to the first account of circumcision in the Bible, which involved Abraham, the father of the Jews. Barnabas points out that Abraham had taken 318 servants into the wilderness to rescue his nephew Lot, who had been taken prisoner by an army of invading kings. See Genesis chapter 14 for that. What is significant for Barnabas is the number 318 itself, a mysterious number that he explains by using the method of interpretation known in ancient Jewish sources as gematria. Gematria was a way of interpreting words in light of their numerical values. In ancient languages, the letters of the alphabet performed double duty as numbers, unlike in English where we use Roman letters but Arabic numerals. The practice is similar, however, to our occasional use of Roman numerals in which, for instance, the I represents 1, V is 5, X is 10. In the case of both ancient Greek and ancient Hebrew, every letter had a numerical value, so that in Greek, for example, the alpha was 1, beta is 2, gamma is 3, and so on. For this reason, every word written in these languages had a numerical equivalent, the sum of the numbers represented by its letters. Conversely, every number was represented by a sequence of letters. In explaining the curious fact that Abraham, to whom God had given the rite of circumcision, had taken precisely 318 servants to save his nephew, why 318? Barnabas notes that 318 is represented in Greek by the letters tau, iota, and eta. For him, this number is significant because it clearly shows that circumcision prefigures the Christian religion. The Greek letter tau, he points out, is made in the shape of the cross, and iota and eta, the Greek letter looks like the English letter H, are the first two letters of the name Jesus, Iesos, see chapter 9, verses 1 to 8. The true circumcision is thus not the literal cutting of the flesh of the foreskin, it's the cross of Jesus. Adherence to the cross, not literal circumcision, is what makes a person a member of the people of God. According to Barnabas, this doctrine is found in the text of the Jewish scriptures themselves in the story of Abraham, the father of circumcision. Barnabas assures his readers that no one had ever heard a more excellent lesson from him. See chapter 9, verse 9. And I suppose he's right. This fascinating piece of early Christian writing ends on a different note by describing the two ways of life, the morally upright way of light and the morally perverse way of darkness. These are paths that all people must choose between, and the author indicates the moral practices and improprieties pertaining to each. In conclusion, what can we say about Christian self-definition as expressed in the Epistle of Barnabas? Christians here do not, strictly speaking, stand in continuity with historical Judaism. Judaism is a false religion followed by people who do not understand their own scriptures. This harsh indictment of the Jews serves to differentiate them from the Christians, who are the only true heirs to the promises of God. The scriptures belong to the Christians, and the Jews have no right to them. As the people of God, on the other hand, the Christians' roots are as ancient as Moses and the prophets. Christians may not appear to be distinct from the rest of the world in the way the Jews are, but that's only because the Jews have misconstrued their own religion. True religion means accepting the cross of Christ and living a moral, upright life as a member of God's covenantal community, the Christian Church. So the following is a brief bullet point description of the book at a glance. So, the Epistle of Barnabas at a glance. 1. The non-canonical Epistle of Barnabas is not actually an epistle, but a treatise about the true nature of Judaism from a particular Christian perspective. 2. It's attributed to Barnabas, the travelling companion of Paul. Barnabas, however, could not have written the book, as it was produced sometime around 130 CE. 3. It may have been written in Alexandria, in Egypt, which at one time had a large Jewish population, and eventually became an important centre for Christianity. 4. The author of Barnabas argues that Judaism is, and always has been, a false religion, that Jews have never understood their own law, and that they have never had a true covenant with God, since they broke the covenant as soon as it was made with Moses on Mount Sinai. And 5, the law of Moses, for this author, is to be interpreted symbolically rather than literally. The entire Old Testament, in fact, is a Christian rather than a Jewish book.